अश्यतो लक्ष्मणस्यैव कथानायिकपुङ्गवः। सत्यपाशपरीता मिथुरनिदेशम् या सत्यपाशपविवीतपितुर्निदेशम् स्त्रहणस्य चापि शिरसा जगिते सपर्या रहचं श्रियं प्रणासुहृदो निवासम् जहत्वा ययो वनमसूनिवमुक्तसङ्गा। Carrying out the order of his father, who was bound by a promise to his wife, Lord Ramachandra left behind his kingdom, opulence, friends, well-wishers, and residents, and everything else, just as a liberated soul gives up his life and went to the forest with Sita. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Dashrath had three wives. One of them, Kaikeyi, served him very pleasingly, and therefore he wanted to give her a benediction. Kaikeyi, however, said that she would ask for the benediction when it was necessary. At the time of the coronation of Prince Ramchandra, Kaikeyi requested her husband to enthrone her son Bharat and send Ramchandra to the forest. Maharaj Dasharat, being bound by his promise, ordered Ramchandra to go to the forest according to the dictation of his beloved. And the Lord, as an obedient son, accepted the order immediately. He left everything without hesitation, just as a liberated soul or a great yogi gives up his life without material attraction.
रक्षास्वस्योऽवकृतरूपमशुधबुधेस्तहस्याकरात्रिशिरधूषणमुख्यबन्धून् जहग्ने चतुर्दशसहस्रमपार्णनया क्रोधन्दपानिरत्मना उवशाखदिच्छम्।
While wandering in the forest where he accepted a life of hardship, carrying his invincible bow and arrows in his hand, Lord Ramachandra deformed Ravana's sister, who was polluted with lusty desires, by cutting off her nose and ears. He also killed her 14,000 Rakshasa friends, headed by Kara, Trishira, and Dushana. We're reading today from the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Srila Shukadeva Goswami is summarizing the beautiful and wonderful pastimes of Lord Ramchandra to his worthy and humble disciple, Maharaj Parikshit. He is describing here that just as a man or a woman who is liberated gives up their life without any material attachments, in the same way, Lord Sri Ramchandra, to fulfill his duty, was willing to leave behind his kingdom, his opulence, his friends, family members, well-wishers, residents, and everything else. It is described by Parasara Muni that Bhagwan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, possesses six opulences: Aishwaryasya, samagrasya virayasya yashashashriya jnana vairagyos chaivasanam bhaga ithin gana. The opulence, the beauty, wealth, knowledge, fame, renunciation, strength. These are the six all-attractive opulences. And when the Lord appears in this world, He especially displays specific of these opulences just to attract the minds of all the world unto His lotus feet. Just like Lord Narasimhadev exhibited the supreme opulence of strength, Kapila Muni displayed the supreme opulence of knowledge. Lord Ramchandra is here displaying His supreme opulence of renunciation. Human form of life is meant specifically for tapasya. Tapasya means renunciation. Vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga shikshashtame ka purusha purana. It is written about Lord Sri Chaitanya that he taught these three most essential principles: renunciation, knowledge, and devotional service. Without renunciation, without rejecting those things unfavorable for the goal of pure Krishna consciousness, one cannot properly make advancement in spiritual life. Human life is meant for renunciation. Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam. Therefore, in each of the four varnas, in each of the four ashrams, there are specific types of detachment and renunciation that is prescribed. It is said that we should die before we die. What does that mean? At the time of death, we must detach ourselves from everything of this world. We must detach ourselves from this body. We must detach ourselves from all family members, from all friends, from all possessions, from all wealth, from all property. We must detach ourselves from all our egoistic conceptions of who we are and what we can do and what we have done and what we want to do. This is death, a total severing of all of our material attachments, both subtle and gross. And it comes by force. You cannot avoid death. You may postpone it by your endeavors for a short time. At least you may think you can. But you cannot avoid it. It is inevitable, sure as death. Therefore, ultimately, we are all renunciates. At the time of death, we renounce everything. But it is not by our free will. It is by force. Therefore, it is painful. And we get no credit for what we have done. We give up everything that we love in this world, and we get no credit for doing it. Rather, the laws of nature blame us and punish us. For leaving this world with so many attachments remaining. Therefore, it is said, die before you die. This means that we should detach ourselves from all material objects of sense gratification, both gross and subtle,
before we die.
Tapodivyam putrika yena sattvam.
It is a difficult thing to do. But here Lord Ramchandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is teaching us in his role as a human being how to die before we die. The duty of the human form of life is atato brahma jigyasa, to inquire and pursue the absolute truth. Ramchandra, his father, was like guru to him. His father was a very, very pious, self-realized soul. He was pure in heart in every respect. He was an empowered devotee. And therefore, Ramchandraji, he would not have been blamed in any way, shape, or form. In fact, his father would have rewarded him and been grateful for him if he didn't go to the forest. This story is so illustrative and so instructive. For one thing, it explains how in this world everything is so uncertain. Even things we expect to happen in their natural course can be disrupted at any second. Samsara dava nalivida doka. This world is like a forest. And sometimes, without any apparent intention or provocation, there is conflict, there is war, there is pain, there is death. At any moment, fire can break out. It is the nature of this world.
Sukha dukha da. Matrisparashastu kontaya shitoshna sukha dukha da. Agamapayano nityas thamstatiksha subharata.
Krishna says the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress are like the winter and summer seasons. They are constantly changing. We should tolerate them and not be disturbed. So here we find Dasarath Maharaj and all of the citizens of Ayodhya. Since the time of Lord Ram's very birth on Ram Navami, their object of meditation and contemplation was when we will enthrone this most beautiful and all-attractive child as the king. We want to follow him. We want to serve him. We want to love him. That was the only thing in the minds of all the citizens of Ayodhya. And Maharaj Dasarath, the joy of his life was simply awaiting the day to put his son Ram on the throne and see him in his full glory as the king of the earth. He was only 17 years old. Just a child. But he was so well-mannered. He was so absolutely humble. And yet, at the same time, he was courageous, fearless, and the defender of truth. Sometimes people think that to be humble and meek means to be afraid to stand up for what's right and just to allow everything to just go its own way and not interfere. This is artificial humility. Lord Ram talked real humility. He was always seeking the blessings of his superiors. He would never do anything if it wasn't for the pleasure of his guru and his father. He was so totally obedient and humble. But yet, when the truth, when religious principles were being attacked, he was willing to stand up with his bow and arrow and destroy anything or anyone that stood between the innocent living beings and God. Such qualities are so rare in this world. Therefore, Maharaj Dasarath, he decided, tomorrow we will coronate Ram as king. And when that news was announced, the whole city of Ayodhya was joyous. They were celebrating. And Maharaj Dasarath, with such love in his heart, he couldn't contain himself. Tomorrow, the perfection and fulfillment of all my life's desires will be, Ram will be king. It was really a time of festivity and gratification. And it seemed so natural and inevitable. But then we know the story, that there was a very wicked hunchback woman of the name Mantara. She was actually an apsara of the heavenly planets, who was sent specifically to cause havoc in order to speed up the demise of Ravana. This Mantara approached Kaikeyi in such an angry and terribly depressed mood. She said, there is terrible news that I have to come to tell you. Kaikeyi said, what is that? She said, tomorrow in the morning, Lord Ram will be coronated as king. And Kaikeyi was so jubilant. She loved Ram more than her own son, Bharat. She said, that's wonderful news. I will give you beautiful jewelry and gifts for being the carrier of such auspicious news. Kaikeyi looked at her, you fool. Do you not know what this means? Kaikeyi says, yes, of course I know what it means. Lord Ram is the most virtuous, the most pious, the greatest person on earth. He will rule us like our own children, like his own children. He will rule us with such love and maintain the highest principles of morality and spirituality. Mantara, the power of persuasion. Just see what bad association can do to even a good person's mind. She said, when Ram is coronated as king, he will banish you and Bharat to the forest because he's envious. He knows that Bharat is superior to him. He may even kill him. And you will be treated like a third-class woman, like a slave of Mother Kausalya. If you love your child Bharat, you must save him from this great tragedy. Kaikeyi was convinced. What should I do? Your husband Dasarath, do you remember many years ago when you were fighting in battle with him? You were driving his chariot for him? He was fighting for Indra against the demons. And at that time, he was shot with arrows and he laid on the ground and you picked him up, put him on the chariot, took him off the battlefield and nursed him to health. You saved his life. At that time he said, Kaikeyi, I owe my life to you. I will give you any two benedictions that you desire. And at that time you said, I will ask for them in the future. Now is the time. Enthrone Bharat as king and banish Ram to the forest for 14 years. By the end of that 14 years, Bharat will be so deeply established within the citizen's mind as their protector and king, Ram will have no power over him. Kaikeyi, although such an innocent, pure-hearted, and simple woman, because of the association with this wicked, evil-minded personality of the name Mantara, she lost all her good qualities and she became demoniac. The Ramayan illustrates this point very strong. What association can do to a person. Holy association make one holy, and evil association, materialistic association, will even make the most pious person materialistic and evil. So on Mantra's instruction, Kaikeyi went into a room where she would lament. She put on filthy clothes and laid on the floor and called for Dasarath to come to see her. When he looked upon her, he was shocked. She was like a venomous cobra just ready to strike. Dasarath said, "Tomorrow, your beloved Ram will be coronated as king. You should get up. You should put on clean clothes and celebrate. Why are you lamenting?" She said, "You remember those two benedictions that you offered me?" He said, "Yes, of course. I will give you anything you want, you ask." He trusted her. He loved her, and he trusted her. And when she told him, "Install my son Bharat as king and banish Ram to the forest for 14 years, it was like a flaming arrow that pierced the core of his heart and he fell down unconscious. He was pleading with her. He was begging her. But she would not relent. Ultimately, Ram was called. It was morning time and he was in the temple all night and he was preparing for his coronation. And the whole town was all decorated and everyone was singing and dancing. And Ram went with his beautiful chariot to the house of Kaikeyi. And there he found his father laying in an ocean of sorrow on the floor. What is this that is happening? Dasarath could not speak, so Kaikeyi told him the news. "Ram," he said, "my dear father, if you promise Kaikeyi these benedictions, and this is what she is asking, I must fulfill them on your behalf." And Dasarath was begging him, "No, let me be a liar. Let me break this vow of truth, but stay. This whole city of Ayodhya will be nothing but a dreary void in your absence. And my life, I will not maintain it in separation from you." He was begging him to stay. But Lord Ram replied, "It is my duty to uphold the principles of truth and dignity. Therefore, I will go." And ultimately, when he told Sita that I am going, she was so joyful. "Oh, you are being coronated as king. This is a wonderful thing." He said, no, I am going to the forest for 14 years. It is on Kaikeyi's order. You remain and take care of my mother and father." She said, "No, my Lord, I must go with you. I am not in sorrow that you have to go. I am in sorrow that I have to stay. You must let me go. I have made a vow that I would serve you under any condition of life. That is the vow of marriage." Ram said, "You have been the princess of Mithila. You have never seen an inconvenience in your entire life. How will you live in the forest? You do not know what it is like to live in the forest. Do you know that there are demons and rakshasas who roam the forest drinking people's blood? There is no homes, but you will be sleeping on the hard ground. You will not be wearing nice silken clothes, but you will be wearing the bark of trees. You will not eat fine foods, but only whatever herbs and roots are found laying on the ground. And there are scorpions, and there are serpents, and there are mosquitoes, and there are gnats that will be constantly disturbing you and eating you. And there are ferocious animals like lions and tigers and wolves and jackals, elephants. In the winter, you will have to bear severe cold. In the summer, you will have to tolerate extreme heat. It is very difficult, hard life. You must stay home." She said that, "My Lord, if I am with you, even hell will be like heaven. But in separation from you, even heaven will be like hell." She said, "I will stand by your side, come life or death." When Ram saw her pure, unmotivated love, he had to agree, "Yes, you come." And then Lakshman said, "I will also go. I will build nice huts for you. I will stand and guard you and Sita day and night. You must take me. I will surely die if I am not at your side." So the Lord matted his hair and put tree bark on his body. And it is explained, as he was putting the tree bark on the body of Sita, all the residents of Ayodhya were weeping in mortal pain to see. And although everybody was begging him, pleading with him, "Please, you must stay. Or if you have to go, we will all go with you. We will make the forest into a wonderful kingdom, and we will allow Ayodhya to be a deserted forest. Let Kaikeyi and Bharat live alone here in the city of Ayodhya and rule over the emptiness and the voidness. And we will all be with you in the kingdom of the forest of Dandakaranya." But it was against the duty of Ram to allow anyone in this way to go with him. So he left with Sita and Lakshman. And it is described here, he left just like a liberated soul gives up his body. He had no attachment. He had no concern. He had no care for his kingdom, his opulence, his friends, his well-wishers, his residents, and everything else. In this way, he exhibited the supreme opulence of renunciation. And he also established the principle that we all ultimately should be living by in our life. For our duty to Krishna, for our duty to our spiritual master, we should have no attachment that is contrary to that truth. And the fact is, if we have no attachment save and except what is in harmony with the order and the word of Guru and Krishna, then we have died before we die. Then we can know for sure we will go back to Godhead. But if in our life we have separate desires and separate interests, then at the time of death, we must take another birth to continue to fulfill those material attachments. So how is it possible to become completely detached? Our hearts are filled with so many longings, so many attachments. It is practically impossible to extinguish the multitude of attachments that are dwelling in our hearts. But Krishna says in Gita, Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana pariupashate tesham nityab yoktanam yogakshemam bahamyam. If you simply endeavor on the path of bhakti with this clear understanding in mind, what is the goal of life and what is the truth, then Krishna will attract our hearts and make us completely attached to Him. And we learn how to transform all of our other attachments in connection to Him. A man or a woman are naturally attached to their children. So, to tell a father or mother that you must completely detach yourself from your children before you die, it's impossible. It's so deeply rooted in their heart. It's simply a theoretical idea which has no practical value. Huh? But if we learn how to make that attachment Krishna conscious, then it becomes the source of liberation rather than bondage. How to do that? To make Krishna the center. By chanting the holy name, by associating with saintly people, by hearing from them, we learn how to make Krishna the center of all of our attachments, to make Krishna the object of all of our attachments. This child is being given to me by Krishna, and it is my duty to raise this child to be a lover of God by any means. My attachment is to that duty. Not simply to the child, but to the duty. And our attachment is out of love for the child to bring that child to its liberated state of Krishna consciousness. If that is how you are attached to your child, there will be real love. Why is it real love? Not material attachment, which is something far different than love. It is real love because the substance of it is in Krishna, in service to Krishna. Compassion for a living being to help them become Krishna conscious is love. Our love for our children should not be, this is my child. Our love for our children should be, out of compassion for this child, I must bring him to the lotus feet of Krishna. That is love. We're attached not to what we're taking, but what we're giving. And that holds true with everything in this world. If we simply learn how to make Krishna the center, we learn true renunciation. We find here that Lord Ramchandra all of these things which are so near to it and dear to a person's life, as soon as they had nothing to do with his duty, he just left it. What is our duty? Our duty is to perfect our human life in Krishna consciousness. Even our own spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, do you know he spent decades and decades and decades taking care of his wife and his children, trying to raise them in Krishna consciousness? He was so responsible. He was constantly traveling and working in so many various companies and businesses, providing for them, but at the same time always preaching to them and always setting by the example how to dedicate one's life to the mission of Gurudev. But when the children were grown and he saw that they were actually against the mission of his guru, although they were actually nice devotees, they were against the mission of his guru. When he saw that they had nothing to do anymore with the purpose of his life, which was Krishna consciousness and spreading the mission of Lord Chaitanya, he simply left them. Is that cruel? That is mercy. Srila Prabhupada used to tell us when we would sit at his lotus feet, he said, the whole purpose of family life is that everyone takes to Krishna consciousness. If they're not taking to Krishna consciousness, it's not even a family at all. It's animal civilization. He said, I gave up a useless family. But because I did it in pursuance of service to Krishna, Krishna has now given me a family of tens and thousands who are accepting what I have come to give and who are reciprocating with love. Huh? The fact is, if Srila Prabhupada would not have made that act of renunciation, not a single one of us would be here tonight. It wasn't cruelty, it was love. And besides that, his family members, they're all going back to Godhead, guaranteed, because of his surrender. If you surrender to Krishna, you're never the loser. But we must keep this first and foremost in our minds, the real principle of renunciation. Do not let anything or anyone in this whole creation divert our attention away from our duties to God. Because if we do, we are factually cheating those persons. And we are cheating ourselves. And we are cheating the world. And we are cheating Krishna. Do you know, it was in 1986. 9 years after Srila Prabhupada left this world, I met one of his sons in Mayapur Dham. And someone introduced me and said, this is Srila Prabhupada's, one of his sons. And to me, this was a great honor. My Guru Maharaj he was a great sannyasi. I only knew him as a great sannyasi. I never could imagine him anything else. But somehow or other, this was his son. And I felt like his brother, because I'm also his son. When you accept initiation, diksha, you become the son or the daughter of your guru. So I was just telling him, you are so fortunate. Such a father, the most glorious, merciful, wonderful person that practically has ever walked the face of this earth. And you intimately lived with him for so many years. And Prabhupada factually was equally Krishna conscious when he was a householder living his home as when he was a sannyasi traveling and preaching. There was no difference in his Krishna consciousness. He was simply expressing that Krishna consciousness according to the ashram that was ordained to him at the time. And I was explaining to him how Prabhupada saved my life and saved so many hundreds and thousands of people's lives. And I thought he'd be very happy to hear the glorification of his father. And he looked at me and he said, he left us. He left us. And he made my mother very depressed when he left. And he didn't even finish paying all the bills. We had to pay them. Of course, they were all grown up and working people. But still, they just wanted to sap as much out of him as they could until the day he died. That's their idea of love. He was angry at Prabhupada. So I was thinking, if Prabhupada didn't leave that situation, his family would have never let him leave. And so many people of this world would never have received the enlightenment of his divine grace. And I looked at the son and I said, do you know something? You're going back to Godhead, 100% guaranteed, whether you like it or not. Because it says in the Shastra, anyone who surrenders to Krishna 10 generations before and after, they all go back to Godhead. They all get liberated. If Prabhupada would have stayed home, he would have cheated his family, where they would have had to take birth after birth after birth. The greatest service we can do to anyone is become a pure devotee. The greatest service we can do anyone is to surrender to Krishna. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also followed the same principle of Lord Ramchandra. He was living the most wonderful life possible. But he gave it all up. He took sannyas. He renounced everything of this world to live a life of severe tapasya, simply to chase after the conditioned souls of this world who were unwilling to surrender to Krishna. So, these wonderful incarnations and these great saintly devotees, they establish an extreme principle, which is very difficult to follow. We cannot imitate, but we can't follow in their footsteps. We must understand the principle and apply it to our life. That we must accept things favorable for devotional service and reject those things that are unfavorable. We must know the essence and the spirit of what real renunciation is. To integrate everything in our life with our service to Krishna. Nothing in our life should be separate from our service to Krishna. Now, the average so-called religious person will think that this is outright fanaticism. Everything has to be connected to Krishna? This is ridiculous. Nobody could do this. You're a fanatic. We'll go to temple on Sunday. That's more than enough. But to integrate everything with Krishna? But that is the difference between real religion and Kaitava Dharma, cheating religion. We may or may not be able to do it now, but that should be our goal. That should be the standard that we're striving for at every moment. because factually everything is intimately connected to Krishna. Krishna is the source of everything, and he's the ultimate goal of everyone. And anything we do that is not in pursuance with service to Krishna is an illusion. It's maya. And it will cause bondage and pain and suffering in due course of time. So people may think it's fanatical, but actually it's the only philosophy of real compassion. Because to endorse or to authorize that anything can be done outside of Krishna consciousness is simply leading people to hell and bondage. Perhaps bondage in the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance, but it is all bondage. And for a devotee, it is all hellish. Wet stool, dry stool. It's all stool. Piety, impiety. It's all material. Unless it's connected to Krishna through bhakti, through devotion. And this is a life that will make family life transcendental and worth living. To the degree Grihasthas are renounced of any purpose, situations in their family disconnected from Krishna, to that degree there will be anxiety and suffering and worrying and bondage. It is a fact. What do we need? The only reason why we are striving for all of these things is we think they will give us security and peace of mind, but the fact is only Krishna can give you security and peace of mind. Ravana, he built a city made out of solid gold. He defeated Kuvera, his own brother, who was the treasurer of the demigods and exploited practically all of his wealth. And then he was in the process of building a staircase to the heavenly planets to conquer Indra, which he did. He conquered Indra on many occasions. He and Indrajit, his son. He had all this. But was he satisfied? He had beautiful queens. He had so much wealth. He had so much power. But still, as soon as Suparnaka told him about Sita, who was beautiful, his whole mind was infatuated. I have to have her too. What nonsense. If I were to tell you I'm going to give you a whole island with a whole city made out of solid gold, and you're going to have millions and millions of followers and subjects who will do anything you want, and you will have power and strength beyond imagination, you'd think, oh, I will be very happy in that situation. But he was frustrated. He was totally in anxiety. As soon as there was one thing that he felt was better than what he already had, his mind was totally disturbed and distressed. I have to have that. Wealth can never bring peace or satisfaction. It never did, it never will. Power can never bring satisfaction. It never did, and it never will. No situation in this world can bring satisfaction. Real satisfaction. Except Krishna. Therefore, the art of living is to connect every part of our life with Krishna through devotion. The art of loving anyone or anything is to the degree we integrate our relationship with that person in Krishna consciousness, in devotion to Krishna. And it is simple. It is not a difficult thing. It is the very nature of the soul to be in this consciousness. It is real consciousness. Prabhupada said, anything other than this is unconsciousness. Consciousness means Krishna consciousness. Anything outside of Krishna consciousness is unconsciousness.
because the soul is the source of all consciousness, and the very nature of the soul is to be living in truth, in pure truth, in pure love and devotion to Krishna. Where there isn't love and devotion to Krishna, the soul is in an artificial, diseased condition. Therefore, this is the mercy of the Lord, that He has come to show us how to die before we die, how to so much attach ourselves to Krishna in His loving service, and attach ourselves to the people who are relating with us in Krishna's service. This attachment is perfect. When Vaishnavas leave us, we weep, we cry. We're attached to that person. Why? Because of that person's connection to Krishna. That person is connecting us to Krishna. And our own father and mother or child. If our relationship is purely based on service to Krishna, then there's real love. Then when you weep when that person leaves you, those tears, they do not water the seeds of bondage, but they water the seeds of liberation. Because that person is your understanding of that person, your connection to that person is simply in Krishna consciousness. So whether it's in separation or meeting, that person brings you closer to Krishna. That type of attachment is spiritual. We're not saying destroy attachments. We're saying destroy, cut, sever any attachment that is not linked our minds with Krishna. Krishna is attached to His devotees. And the devotees are attached to Krishna. And the devotees are attached to one another because they are all together serving Krishna. So we have to cultivate this attachment. And at the same time, we must put aside any attachments that are not connecting us to Krishna. We must purify all our relationships. We must purify our life by always remembering Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama.